small.
کوچک.
Smaller.
کوچکتر.
Smallest.
کوچکترین.
Six plus to Persia.
Wow, that really made me jump. I don't know about you. You're listening to Six Pillars to Persia on Resonance 104.4 FM. I'm your host, Farrie Bradley. And today we're joined by Nushin Farhid, who is an artist. She's a filmmaker and a curator. And she's also a lecturer in MA at St. Martin's. Nushin, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
So can you tell us about what we were listening to just there?
It was a piece called Flashpoint. I made it in 2007. And it was based on a true story. But of course, I didn't want to use the story. It developed from that true story to something more kind of contemporary, because that story originally happened during the Second World War to someone.
What story?
The story was about this woman who was shot during the Second World War, and the bullet went to her brain and she never could get it out. I mean, they said we cannot operate it out because it's dangerous. So she had to live with the bullet. But consequently,
it didn't kill her?
No.
That's amazing.
And she...
Sure this is a true story?
It is totally true story. It's a German woman. And then she developed this practice of yoga to stand up half an hour. Headstand. Headstand.
Yeah, I was thinking as most people do that for longer.
No, headstand for half an hour. So the bullet moves a little bit, and the part of the brain which is very painful to the part which promotes serotonin. So half a day she was in total pain, and half of the day was total ecstasy. Of course, she couldn't do it more than half an hour, and also halfway through the day it would wear off. So she had to live with this kind of extreme mood.
So standing on her head gave her relief from the pain.
Yeah. And so I was very fascinated by this true story, and I always wanted to kind of make a video about it. Of course, the story is very interesting, but when it comes into a making of video, it doesn't work. So I used that notion of extreme moods, and also the idea of something terrible happened to someone, changes their life and their position and the way they look at the world. I used that and positioned that event into the contemporary event and made this video.
Mm. Well, and the title's very interesting.
What Flashpoint. Was yeah.
What was that referring to?
Well, flashpoint is it has got different meanings. I think one is scientifically, when the water goes to the kind of certain, what do you call, heat, it suddenly evaporates or something. And also relates to riots. And, you know, when something happened in society and people start to riot, and that's moment of rioting becomes flashpoint.
That's why you chose the name.
Yeah.
You've done so many films. The ones I've seen, they were very incidental. It was as if we were on the edge of an event that had happened, and there was a mobile phone on the floor, dropped on the street. And I remember looking at it thinking, is this a real piece of footage? Has something happened and someone's just dropped the phone? And on the phone was a helicopter flying overhead as a video.
Yeah.
So I was wondering whether that was a video that had just been made prior to the person dropping their phone. And it was kind of intriguing, this whole, because you don't really know what you're looking at.
Yeah, well, that video is a very short video, and it's influenced by the idea of recent events and the idea of if something happens and we don't know about it, the fragments of things, because in the news we continuously overwhelmed with, you know, with this kind of events, which is about disasters, yes, and, you know, like bombs and, you know,
bad
explosion,
news is good
news. You know, yeah, blah, blah. And then I thought, you know, what happens? And also mobile phone has become significant in our society at nowadays. So I thought, well, if a mobile phone is on the floor, means that, you know, something and all the other rubbish and no one else, no, you cannot see anybody. So that moment gives indication that something happened. Someone dropped the mobile phone. But then you see inside the mobile phone another zone, which is, you know, is not that place, is another place. And then the camera goes into mobile phone. So the footage, which is coming from the mobile phone, so you can see both this zone and the other zone. So this is called zone end. And also the footage coming from the mobile phone basically shows the images of city which has been evacuated and no one's there and smokes all over the place and helicopter hovering in
yes,
the sky.
Yes, it was a very good feeling it created. Yeah. I mean, it was very notable.
Yeah.
So what kind of reactions are you getting to your films when you exhibit them?
Well,
you're showing them in galleries, yeah?
Well, no, I show in different venues. I show in galleries, I show in festivals. I showed Zone End in many, many venues. One of them was in Kassel during the Documenta 11, which wasn't part of the Documenta, was parallel to Documenta going on. And it was billboard screening in the street, like a big billboard.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh.
And it worked really well because the mobile phone looked like advert, you know, already. And it works as a billboard screening. And also it's been shown in a video and film festival in Museum of Modern Art, Istanbul, and also in Photographer Galleries, London. And
so are you getting any feedback? Do you ever pretend you're not yourself and hang around to see what people are saying?
Well, I always get good feedback. Yeah. maybe people who want to say good things don't always say things.
And when it was shown in that public space, were you there?
No, I went one day, but, you know, I didn't see it. You know, it's just because it was in the street. It was difficult to see, you know, what people think of the video.
Yes. So that must have been quite exciting to see it on such a large scale.
Yeah, it was exciting, especially then that I made it in 2007 and already been shown all over the place internationally.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what is it about the process of making film that gives you the most pleasure? Is it when you are creating, do you feel a kind of electric static in yourself, or is it when it gets shown, or maybe when you're feeding ideas off other people?
I think the process of making is the most important part of it. It's more enjoyable part of it than anything else.
That's it. So you enjoy the actual process?
Yeah.
The physical one or the conceptual one? Because I know you're in your teaching and your interest, you're quite conceptual, so.
Well, yeah, both ways, you know, both are physical. I think they are not very different from each other because they are so much related to each other. The physicality of a work is also, you know, very much link with this conceptual aspect of it, so they both come together. I mean, when you cannot say something is purely conceptual when it doesn't have any visual effect. Mm. And so it's important, the visual static is very important for me to create that, and that creates a stronger conceptual framework to work.
Yeah. And when you're curating, is that what you look for in other people's work as well?
Yes, I just, before I start to say about my curatorial activity, I wanted to say about how they make my work. So, because it's so much related to my curatorial work, to how I create my work.
How you create it, not how they create it.
Yeah, because, you know, when as an artist, when you curate an exhibition, you have got a certain kind of sensibility and way of looking. So you want to curate an exhibition and invite artists to kind of to have discussion. And it's like, you know, working with others. So it's not like a curator curating a show, it's as an artist curating a show. So I wanted to say a bit about the notion of collage in my work and relate it to my curatorial practice. Because for me, my videos are made of collage. And collage meaning that different, you know, fractured imagery come together. And some of them are found footage and some of them are with my camera. And I put them together. In one way, they are irrelevant and they are not connected to each other. But in another way, they link in a different, you know, they create another narrative, meaning that when you do collage, because historically collage is very important because it defies meaning and it shifts meaning. Because when you use a footage, it depends how you put that in next to another footage, then it creates another meaning. It's not the same. So with curatorial activities, also like that. Like, we were interested in the notion of post-production. So when you ask different artists to come and bring their work in, it depends how you position this artwork. They shift their power from something to another thing. So we are very much interested to play with this shift of power and shift of meaning. So, for example, the first exhibition we did, it was in Keith's Talent Gallery. Keith's Talent Gallery is in Hackney, Mare Street. We asked this artist and we had discussion, international artists, and had discussion that we want to work, you know, the concept of the show is this and blah, blah, blah. And they all agreed to kind of make work which kind of relate to this concept. And they were agreed also that we can position each artwork in a way that you don't know when it starts and when it ends. So it might end when the other art starts. So you cannot, you know, sometimes it's a misunderstanding of whose art is that. So it's become kind of like a big installation.
Is it film that you're curating?
No, it was multimedia. It was objects, video, all sort of things.
So you were thinking about also how they relate to each other as artworks as well, as a collage. The whole curation for you is a collage of people's work. And that's interesting that you were also commissioning the work from the artists. They weren't coming to you with ready-made pieces.
No.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
And what about your students? Do you also encourage them that way?
No.
You keep them down.
No, it's not. I don't encourage, because when it comes to students, then I don't ever impose my idea to them. So, you know, in some extent, maybe I do.
And how did you get into art? Did you study it formally or?
Yeah, of course I studied art, but how I get into art has got very much related to my background. And when I came to this country, at the beginning I didn't speak English and I couldn't understand English. So for a few years I was in such a situation which felt like a dream-like state, that you are in an environment without you half understand people. So it's like a fantasy space that, for example, a lot of time I was in awkward situation that people ask you something and you answer something completely irrelevant. and these moments you have to always hold on into humorous aspect of things. Otherwise you continuously feel like a stupid or something. Yeah. And so that's kind of situation had a very powerful impact in me. Like, for example, I used to write in the past, and I used to, like, I have written lots of poems, like 200 poems in Iranian, in Farsi. But then I became attracted to visual language because, first of all, because of the lack of language. And secondly, I became really interested in the idea of the fact that I am standing out of a system or, you know, language system, and it makes you think, look at everything in a fresh kind of way.
That's right. I can see that.
And then also, you don't bogged up with the nuisance of language and, you know, like a cultural inhibitions or habitual patterns. Mm. You are completely free of those kind of boundaries. So being an artist then is the obvious kind of thing.
Yes,
to
it
be.
Does. And also it probably relates to the kind of boundaries that you had to undergo when you were living in Iran,
yeah.
Also, because the visual media and also the situation of being here gives you all that freedom that you were working against not having in Iran.
Yeah.
Is that right? I mean, I don't want to ask too many questions.
No, that's fine. No, that's okay. The thing is, in here, I think there is an absolute sense of, you know, although it was very difficult to begin with when you are living in a country, not to understand very well everything every day. But also it's fascinating because you kind of like become a... you become an observer and voyeur, you know, and it is completely different position. You always standing outside and looking and watching, and but you watching in a different way. And with art practice especially, I'm attracted to people's normal everyday conversation, like mobile phone and people talking in dinner parties. Or and then because I look and observe, I find something poignant about this conversation that maybe people who are engaged, they cannot, you know, they cannot understand. But because you are disengaged with the world, you are just in another position, you see these things. Like, for example, I made this video at 2002 called Sorry, Mr. Bond is Dead.
Oh, yes.
And this video was edited from ordinary conversation between two typical English men. But then they were drinking wine and everything. And it went through considerable editing. And at the end, what it came out of it was completely different. And their masculinity and the things they were talking all the time about sex, typically. And it became much more intense. And then it kind of, through the juxtaposition of other images with these two people, I created a sense of disturbing situation about their vulnerabilities. And it's kind of, at the end, it became very demasculating them, you know, and stripped them out of their arrogance, basically, in the video. So it became completely something opposite of what was intended to be.
Yeah. So did you script it?
No, they were just, you know, they're just friends, you know, they're talking about sex and they were drinking and they were talking about...
Oh, did they know you were filming them?
Yeah, I just said, can I just put my camera there? And they didn't care.
I bet they care now.
No, they don't mind because actually they like the film. The video is a half an hour video. But that was a starting point for me to, you know, to kind of observe and make fracture imagery through making video.
You're very good with your titles because, you know, we can understand a lot of what the main core concept is with your titles, and they're not immediately obvious what it's going to be about. Mm. So obviously that one was about chivalry being dead.
Yeah, I think titles for me as important as the actual work. It's part of the work, you know. That's why I really, really work hard to make a right title for
my
work.
What do you think about all those people who do untitled works?
Well, I don't want to judge on the other people, but I wouldn't do untitled, you know, because title is important for me personally. And...
what about being Iranian? Is that very important in your work?
Well, it is obviously important. I came to this country, I came as a political refugee, and I was involved in political activity in Iran, mainly with a women organization called National Union of Women. And they used to do a lot of campaign against discrimination of women in Iran, which brought forward by Sharia law. And then like this organization, like a lot of other political organizations, became under attack of government, and so many friends of mine been arrested and some executed. So that's why I came here as a refugee. And then when you come to another country, you are stripped off your identity in a way, and position and status and everything. It's like, and most importantly, your confidence.
Yeah. But it's lucky you got away.
Yeah, well, at the end. What I was talking about.
About how being Iranian enters into your work.
I think, you know, when I started making art, that's important, because when I started making art, I started to make, started all sorts of different media, like drawing, painting, sculpture, photography. At the end, I realized that the film and moving image is the best tool for me to develop my ideas. I was articulate more with video making than other tools. And then with that, I realized that perhaps is about history of filmmaking in Iran. Mm. And I thought, well, Iran has got very strong history of filmmaking, and perhaps that influenced me as well.
You've watched a lot of films, I suppose.
Oh, yeah, I was very much into film.
And still?
I am, because I think, Deleuze, the French philosopher, always says cinema is the most important 20th century art. And I think it is most important because it has got the ability to make a radical image making.
So where would people be able to see your films?
I always have shows, but they can always see in my website, the first page, I write my activities, you know, things coming up and coming.
News and events.
News and events and things being shown.
What's the website address then?
It's nooshinfarhid.com.
Okay, so it's spelled nooshinfarhid.com.
Yes.
That's right. Great, well, I hope we get to see some in a public space. What are you working on at the moment?
I am working on a piece called Sleepwalkers.
Oh, yes.
It's not finished. I might change the title
later. No, but it's a brilliant concept that you told me about earlier.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was interested in the notion of violence and gangs in this country. And then I did a lot of research. And
don't give it away yet.
Well, you know, doesn't matter. I mean, it's I don't mind. And I did a lot of research, and I kind of tried to do a video about it. But my videos are not documentaries or they are not very straightforward narratives. So I wanted to create a kind of dreamlike, also, you know, violent video, which, you know, has got poetic and violence in it. And also, I think conceptually, a sleepwalkers is like you do things without knowing what you are doing because you are asleep.
You mean like people who kill other people? When they're young and then they grow older and
kind
regret
of,
it. Something
yeah.
rash like that. And, well, I suppose it's a bit more than rash.
it's kind of like we can say all of us are sleepwalkers because we do things without thinking or without knowing what we are doing. But, you know, it's sometimes you just get into a certain type of pattern and repeat. Mm-hmm. And the notion of repetition and things is... it's
especially in a gang, because that association precipitates that kind of repetition.
Yeah.
Mm, it's interesting.
But, you know, but I have to admit that it hasn't yet developed. It's a kind of... I am right in the middle of it, so it might change and shift, yeah. And I might change the title. At the end, it might not be very much about gangs, but at the moment, it is about them.
There was also a really short film that you did of a group of girls hanging around near a rubbish... in a fire escape.
Sneakers.
What were they doing?
Well, I don't know what they were doing.
Yeah.
But I don't think they were doing drugs, but it looked like as if they are
something
going,
shifty.
And I looked at it so many times and I thought, you know, it was accidental actually, that video. Mm. And it wasn't you know, it wasn't like, and then I told them, you know, I went out, told them I made a video of you, and they didn't mind. So I thought they didn't do drugs. But what is important about the video, it was, you know, the fact that they are doing an activity which is similar to a certain type of activity, like drug taking. But you don't know. You are not ever certain what it is they are doing.
It was also very sad. It was very sad to see those girls in that place.
Yeah.
Although there was nothing particularly sad.
Yeah. I think they were playing, actually. I don't know. But that's, as an artwork, I want the audience to be in that ambiguous space.
So if you want to get into that ambiguous space, please check Nooshin Farhid's website and find out where you can go and get into that space. So thank you very much
for
coming.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. What track are we going to go out with? You've brought some more sound.
Oh, okay. This sound is at the end of the video called Mrs. Hodges' Frequent Use of Air Freshener. Another title.
You're brilliant with the titles.
And this is made out of found footage and put together. So, you know, that's the end of the video.
The explosion had been the catalyst which exposed the desperate weakness of the whole building point. Investigators soon found a tiny nut, which was tightened to the point of cracking. By a bizarre chance, Mrs. Hodges' frequent use of household air freshener had disguised the smell. For weeks, the whole building had been on the edge of disaster. No one knows just what trivial knock had finally broken the nut, allowing the smell to seep into the flat.